Some days the podcast gods just shine down on you and they say, you, here's a couple of great things to talk about. Here's some chickens that have kind of come home to roost a little bit today. So you're not going to have any shortage of material. And if it's not that, sometimes, you know, they just hand you like a great Dennis Gartman letter to read. But today, there are two crazy situations that I want to talk about, and it looks as though the chickens may finally be coming home to roost with one of my all-time least favorite companies in history, Mallinckrodt PLC, which was the acquirer of Questcor Pharmaceuticals, which built a $5 billion company on the back of a drug that cost them $100,000 to buy, and then the company that bought that eventually turned themselves into like a $15 billion market cap company using Questcor's Acthar as their, their selling point, as their magic drug, as the thing that's going to create cash out of thin air. You know, one of these old articles about Acthar, I think it was in the New York Times, said, the doctor said, one patient asked me if Jesus made it. No, Jesus did not make it, okay? It's derived from the pituitary glands of pigs, and it is, in my opinion, one of the most egregious and absolutely appalling things to ever happen to the pharmaceutical industry in the United States of America. I wrote an article stating as much back in 2016, and that followed years of articles and criticism that I was lodging upon the company back in 2014, I think even in 2013, but I was really following in the footsteps of other short sellers who had pointed out a lot of the issues with this acquisition, or with this drug acquisition, rather. Citron Research was in there and had published a great deal about it. They did a lot of the heavy lifting. David Einhorn was actually short the stock back, I think, in 2013, 2014, and I think he was short Mallinckrodt at some point also, too. I know, I think Jim Chanos was short Mallinckrodt at some point also. So today, just going to give a quick rundown of the Mallinckrodt thesis as to why I think the company is one of the most appalling pharmaceutical scams, really, of all time. Today is April 12th, 2018, and you're listening to the QTR podcast. As always, none of this is investment advice. Do your research elsewhere. Please assume I have no clue what I'm talking about. And if you can, if you have the means, I highly encourage adhering to a two-drink minimum while listening to the podcast. It's just going to make things better for you. It's going to make things better for me. Today is, of course, free coffee day at Wawa also, so I do have myself a lovely little Wawa coffee here, a freshie. So let's get kicked off and let's get this thing started. I was going to try and cover the whole Tesla and NTSB story today as well, but I'm going to have to save that for another podcast. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow. I just feel like this Mallinckrodt story is going to take me a little while to tell, but certainly I have an opinion on everything that happened with Tesla as well. So maybe we'll get into that tomorrow. But today I want to tell this story. You know, it's a little cathartic and it's a little personal for me. So let's get to it. The first thing I want to talk about is I want to talk about Mallinckrodt. I want to talk about the lawsuit that hit the news today, and I want to talk about the company's history, and I want to talk about its acquisition of Questcor and Questcor's history, and just lay out maybe the last, as long as I can remember and do it off the top of my head, history of this drug Acthar, which is Mallinckrodt's flagship drug and was Questcor's flagship drug back in the day. So I will give listeners who don't really understand the whole story a little bit of background, and I'm going to do it with the help of a couple articles that I've written and a couple of articles that I've read as well. So Acthar is a gel that is made from the pituitary gland of pigs. It was approved in, I think it was approved in 1952. But it was definitely approved in the early 50s, and it was approved at a time before the Food and Drug Administration needed robust clinical data to approve drugs. So back then, there was no, it wasn't necessary to conduct, you know, these double-blind placebo controlled clinical trials that the Food and Drug Administration now require to have a drug approved. So this drug was approved back in the early 50s, and it was originally used for infantile spasms, which is a very rare and very non-populous disorder that doesn't affect a large majority of people. And as such, as synthetic ACTH options became available, especially in Europe where there's a synthetic that's been approved, and as the patient population started to dwindle over the years, the drug simply became less and less in demand until eventually it was owned by a company that is now Sanofi. And at that point, I think in the early 2000s, Sanofi had a $40 per vial price tag on the drug. So the drug basically comes in this little vial, and what you do is you inject it into your thigh. I've watched a couple of videos as to how you're supposed to administer it, but it's basically gel, it's goo that you're supposed to put into a needle and inject under your skin. It's not supposed to be intravenously, I don't believe, but don't quote me on any of this. I'm not a doctor, of course, so if you're an Acthar user, don't listen to anything that I say, and you should generally just not listen to anything I say in general. With that said, I believe that you administer the drug by injecting it into your thigh. And it is supposed to, in children, it's supposed to alleviate these infantile spasms. And so going into the early 2000s, the drug didn't really have any type of huge total addressable market. And as such, when demand starts to kind of wane and fizzle out, the price also goes with it. And so Sanofi, or the company that was bought by Sanofi that had it before him, which I think was Aventis, was charging, I believe, $40 per vial for this drug. So you had a relatively not very well-known drug for a very small indication that wasn't, you know, extremely ubiquitous, that really, you know, had a drug that wasn't really worth much and wasn't really in demand and wasn't really much of anything. Until Questcor comes along and buys the rights to this drug in the early 2000s. And they pay Aventis $100,000, I believe, for the rights to the drug. That was the very first sign to me that something was wrong along the line somewhere, because when I found out the drug had been acquired, the rights to the drug had only been acquired for $100,000, and that Questcor was turning this into a, you know, several $100 million enterprise, and turning its company eventually into a several billion-dollar company, you have to kind of just stop and apply some common sense and say, well, if they sold this drug for $100,000, how can it be the basis for this company that is, you know, now a multi-billion-dollar company? Doesn't make any sense. They would have to go and find some incredible value in this drug that's been around for, you know, 5 or 6 decades that nobody else noticed over the course of time, and go in and somehow, you know, extract that value to the tune. It would be the worst sale of a product by anybody ever. If you think about it, why would Aventis sell the drug for $100,000 if they knew that it could be flipped into this $5 billion enterprise? This isn't some, you know, slight mispricing or some lack of price discovery where you go out and you sell an asset for $1 million and it turns out to be worth $2 million, or you go out and you, you know, pay too much for a baseball card, or you pay too much for a stock and you find out maybe it's worth either 50% less or 50% more than what you had paid for it. This is not some like casual mispricing, like, oh, you know, we just got it wrong, you know. No, this is a huge, enormous, enormous delta from the original price. It was sold from Aventis for $100,000, and it was eventually turned into a company that was sold to Mallinckrodt for $5.6 billion, I believe. Now, how did they do that? Well, how about this? The first thing they did after they bought the drug was they raised the price from $40 per vial to something like $23,000 per vial overnight. That was the first big price increase for Acthar. So immediately, without changing anything material with the way that it was manufactured or without really any major changes, this drug that, you know, has been made for 6 decades or 5 decades that was used for this tiny indication, now all of a sudden sees its price go from $40 per vial after, and then after it was purchased by Questcor, unexplainably goes to $23,000 per vial. So right there, you know, you have a major price gouging story, and one that was not covered by anybody, really. You know, Citron Research came out and put out a couple of good pieces on it, and I think Einhorn mentioned it publicly at some point, and I put out a couple articles about it, and really nobody really paid attention. This was before the Hillary Clinton tweet that criticized the healthcare industry, before Valiant got killed. It was before all the specialty pharmas and the roll-ups got murdered. So the air of skepticism in the healthcare industry wasn't quite fully in bloom yet. And so these guys were one of the first. They were one of the first operators to kind of use this strategy of price hikes, slashing R&D. In this case, they didn't really need any R&D. Everything was figured out. The drug was already approved. All they did was hike the price. All they did was move the price from $40 a vial to $23,000 a vial or whatever it was. And so at that point, Questcor goes out and gets orphan drug status for this drug for infantile spasms. And Questcor begins to sell the drug to the very small patient population probably that was using it prior. But instead of insurance companies reimbursing $40 a vial, they're reimbursing $23,000 a vial or whatever it is. And all of a sudden now Questcor becomes this amazing growth story. Right? It's amazing. They turned garbage into gold, as Mark Zumoff would say, the Sixers announcer. You know, when somebody airballs something and instead his own teammate catches it and winds up dunking it or alley-ooping it. Turned garbage into gold. That's exactly what happened here. Took a $100,000 drug that nobody cared about, that, you know, would later be found to have relatively proven efficacy for these infantile spasms, and they jacked up the price of it. Not by a factor of 10, not by a factor of 100, you know, by a factor of several hundred times. And so the Questcor story is born. Don Bailey, the CEO of Questcor, is at the helm, and all of a sudden the top line at Questcor starts to grow. But then they start to hit some type of plateau. And they need a new growth trajectory for this drug. Now, all the while, they're talking about this drug as if there's some type of secret sauce in it that nobody really understands and nobody really knows about. Don Bailey said publicly several times, you know, there's a secret sauce. They have some type of trade secret with the way that this Acthar is made. For $23,000 a vial, they have to go out to the public and really make the story that they have something very special here. Because why wouldn't somebody just go out and create a synthetic version that, again, already exists in Europe and produce what would relatively and simply be considered as almost a generic to the drug? And the makeup of the drug was in the name. It was supposed to be highly purified adrenocorticotropic hormone. In essence, I think it was this ACTH that was stabilized in a gel, which supposedly gives it a longer release effect. So the drug was actually the highly purified ACTH, and it was then put into a gel, and that's how it would be administered. So Questcor bought this drug, and they started to kind of justify the fact that they were raising prices because the patient population for infantile spasms was so small. As a matter of fact, the Questcor CEO said in 2009, quote, "We have this drug at a very high price right now because really our principal market is infantile spasms. It's really driven by the very, very small population of patients that need the drug." So their justification was that because there was such a small indication, the price needed to go way up. But what happened after the infantile spasms gravy train kind of started to fade away was the company took the orphan drug designation and they started to kind of look to expand the use of Acthar for other indications. So at some point, infantile spasms became the minority of what the drug was prescribed for. And all of a sudden, it was being prescribed for nephrology. It was being prescribed for rheumatology. It was being prescribed for acute multiple sclerosis exacerbations. And all of a sudden now, we have a drug that was worth $100,000 a couple years prior that is now being marketed as a drug that can be used for really anything. I think there were 17 or 18 indications that they were trying to use it for at this point. One of the most prominent ones was acute multiple sclerosis exacerbations. And there were several doctors who came out and questioned the use of the drug for these MS exacerbations. Basically, as the drug's popularity grew and grew, there started to be a little bit of a chorus of individuals who wanted to know if the drug was worth what people were paying for it. And because there weren't any double-blind, placebo-controlled clinical trials of Acthar gel versus not just placebo, but also synthetic steroids, which would be the closest thing to a generic, there was no real way for people to gauge whether or not Acthar was having this profound effect or whether or not the sale of it was strictly coming from basically a hard sell that the company was putting on doctors, who many of whom they were paying speaking fees to at the time, and salespeople who were likely incentivized by being able to make extremely large amounts of money by selling this stuff. Somebody wrote in the comments section to one of my recent articles, my friend worked at Mallinckrodt selling Acthar gel, and their annual bonus was $95,000 or $80,000 or something. And so the company does whatever they have to do to get the drug out there. It's basically a hard sell campaign. That's what Citron called it in one of their articles. They called it a hard sell. And so what we have here is we have a situation where this drug that doesn't have any type of real clinical proven efficacy versus steroid or versus placebo in any type of clinical trial that is a double-blind trial that meets the rigorous standards of what the FDA is looking for in a clinical trial now. We have this product that is being peddled basically for, you know, 15, 16, 17 different indications. And there is this campaign around the drug where, again, the company talks about it as if there's some secret ingredient in it that just makes it work. You know, in one of the New York Times articles, again, one of the doctors who was being paid speaking fees, I believe, was interviewed by Gretchen Morgenson, I believe, don't quote me on that, from the New York Times. And he said, you know, one person asked me if Jesus made it. So they hype this drug up like it can do all these miraculous things, and not for nothing, but if a patient is going to have a placebo effect, that's the mindset that you want to kind of get them in when they go to administer the drug. I'm not saying that a placebo effect is happening, but I'm just saying in an instance where it may happen, it certainly helps for the patient to go in with the mindset that they might be injecting some magic into them. But regardless, Questcor took this drug and they started to market it for all these different indications, and eventually Questcor, which really was nothing more than a vehicle used to sell Acthar, there were no other, you know, revenue or cash generating aspects of Questcor that were meaningful. Acthar was pretty much the whole shebang. They took this drug and they turned it into a company that was eventually acquired for $5.6 billion. And that was it. They were being acquired strictly for Acthar. So if you go back and you read some of the articles that were produced at about the time that Mallinckrodt acquired them, you'll see. I mean, the headlines were basically Mallinckrodt acquires QuestCore for Acthar. So where's the problem here, right? The problem is you have this drug that's 60 years old, doesn't have rigorous clinical data versus synthetic for almost all of the indications it's being used for, at least not clinical data that meets the FDA standards. You have doctors being paid speaking fees. You have the company referring to it as if it's magic. And all of a sudden, again, you've flipped a $100,000 drug into a $5.6 billion company. All the while, the executives are getting paid, the people that are selling the drug are making money, and the insurers are getting gouged to the tune of $23,000 a vial to reimburse for this stuff that nobody really knows if it works or not. So at the time that QuestCore was basically setting up to be acquired by Mallinckrodt, or shortly before then, a couple things had happened. The Department of Justice, I believe, and several other government entities started to investigate. They actually launched a formal investigation into QuestCore for their marketing practices. If you go back and you read some of QuestCore's last annual reports, and you go back and actually think, I think it's in the merger proxy as well. They disclose that they're being investigated by the government and being investigated by regulators for their marketing practices surrounding Acthar. And at the same time, insurers were starting to make public comments, not just at various panels that they spoke at, which I wrote about at least one of them. The Aetna National Medical Director said at a panel, you know, what are we paying for this stuff for? But in addition to that, they were putting in their policies that Acthar was, quote, not medically necessary, quote, for any other indication aside from infantile spasms. And at the same time, the buyout of QuestCore and what Mallinckrodt kind of hoped would be their future was banking on this drug being able to be used for an additional 15 or 16 indications. I mean, that was the only growth trajectory. The whole story is really lunacy. I mean, the growth trajectory for the drug is based upon this fairy tale that this, you know, 60-year-old drug that went unnoticed and was sitting in the fucking dumpster at Aventis is now the end-all, be-all, cure-all for everything. You know, nephrology, rheumatology, whatever. Yeah, but just fucking rub some Acthar on it. I mean, it's appalling when you think about it. But instead, Mallinckrodt went out and they paid up $5.6 billion to acquire QuestCore while they were being investigated by the government. And at the same time, right around the same time, after Citron Research had published a comprehensive laboratory analysis of the drug, they were able to get their hands on a sample of the drug. And what they found was that when they had the drug tested independently, that the amino acid chain that the lab found was different than the amino acid chain that was listed for highly purified ACTH. There was a glutamic acid in one of these parts of the chains that was supposed to be a glutamine, or vice versa. I'm not a chemist, but there was something in the amino acid chain that was different. And it could have been a result of deamidation, which I believe is something that occurs basically when a product goes stale if it's been sitting around for a while. But don't quote me on any of that. And so Citron raised a whole bunch of questions in one of its reports, basically asking the FDA, you know, if our tests, which have been, you know, chain of custody has been respected, and our tests were done by a reputable lab, and we'll send you our information on the drug, how can you kind of let this drug be out there? And I think this was 2014-ish. And so Citron wound up, according to them in their report, sending a package to the FDA with their findings from the laboratory testing. And the FDA, according to the New York Times, I believe, was at one point investigating. And at this point, I had written a couple articles kind of asking the FDA, like, how can you let this stuff be out there? First off, forget the fact that we don't have robust clinical data regarding whether or not it works for any of these new indications, but let's also think about the fact that, you know, these findings by a relatively reputable short seller are very different than what's on the packaging. But nothing was ever heard from, again, by the FDA. And nothing was ever heard of the Department of Justice inquiry into the company. And, you know, the drumbeat kind of carried on. I wrote an article called Questcor Ate the Steak and Mallinckrodt Will Likely Foot the Bill. And that is exactly what's happening. Mallinckrodt went out. They acquired the, you know, I spoke to a very reputable short seller who spoke to Mark Trudeau, who was the CEO of Mallinckrodt, while they were making this acquisition. And he raised these concerns. And what I was told was Trudeau talked the guy in circles and basically talked about how accretive the acquisition was going to be towards the company's EPS, and that was it. So it's just a case of it's going to make the bottom line look good, so fuck everything else. And Mallinckrodt eventually acquired Questcor, and the deal closed. And Don Bailey and all the people at Questcor all cashed out. They're all millionaires many times over now, I'm sure. They're all doing very well. And all of a sudden, Mallinckrodt shareholders started to go on this ride. The stock kept going and going and going up as Acthar sales continued to go up. And not only did sales continue to go up, but the price of Acthar continued to go up to, I believe, over $30,000 a vial. So you have a company now that's charging $30,000 a vial plus for a drug that was used to cost $40 a vial and was acquired for $100,000. Meanwhile, as this is happening, the Hillary Clinton tweet on the healthcare industry happens, and all of a sudden everybody's focusing on Martin Shkreli, and everybody's focusing on Mylan and the EpiPen. But somehow Mallinckrodt kind of slithers its way out of this, and nobody notices what's going on. I mean, this is the most egregious price gouging story, I think, in medical history. And certainly for me, it's one of the most appalling stories I've ever heard. I can't believe that nothing from a regulatory standpoint has happened. It's insanity. It's just insanity. But Mallinckrodt shareholders eventually took the ride up, you know, from 40 to 80 to 120. I think the stock almost hit 110 or $120 a share at some point. And everything looked like it was going to keep going, and the record was going to keep playing, and Acthar was, nobody was going to notice. And then all of a sudden, and by the way, it's also worth noting that Mallinckrodt levered up to make this acquisition. It was really almost more like Questcor was kind of backing its way into Mallinckrodt versus an acquisition. So Mallinckrodt took on a lot of debt in order to fund this acquisition. And basically what Mallinckrodt was doing was they were making a large future bet on Acthar. That they would continue to be able to grow its number of indications, that they would continue to be able to raise the price of it, and that nobody would notice that nobody really seems to have a fucking clue as to whether or not this drug has any efficacy versus placebo or versus a synthetic, much lower priced synthetic. The synthetic is something like 1/100th of the price, 1% of the price, I believe. But the record continued to spin until all of a sudden it didn't. And then insurers started to push back a little bit further. And then all of a sudden Express Scripts kind of turned on the company. And all of a sudden the Mallinckrodt story started to just kind of nudge its way out into the limelight a little bit. Just a little bit. And next thing you know, the stock goes from $110 per share to where it is today at about $14 per share. And when I wrote the articles back in 2014 saying, you know, one article was called Mallinckrodt's CEO is leading his shareholders to the slaughter, and the other one was called Questcor ate the steak and Mallinckrodt's gonna foot the bill, this is exactly what I was talking about. Questcor kind of somehow, magically, took this drug that was $100,000 and turned it into a $5 billion empire, which Mallinckrodt then at some point had transformed for itself into a, you know, I think a $15 billion market cap, I want to say at some point. And I'm talking about market cap, not enterprise value. They have $6 or $7 billion in debt too. So they made an empire out of this. And since then, the stock is down something like 90% or 85%. But the stock is down meaningfully. And why is that? Well, because people are starting to realize you can't prescribe Acthar for everything. People are starting to realize that there is no real robust clinical data. As a matter of fact, Mallinckrodt did some data to try, they did some tests to try and figure out if Acthar could be used in lupus, and that trial failed to meet its primary endpoint. So they did one clinical trial, which was a failure, and they claim that they're out there trying to produce more clinical trials, but really what they've produced is they've produced a lot of analogies and a lot of kind of backhanded doctor's testimonials, white papers, anything that isn't a, you know, clinical trial, that isn't a robust clinical trial, they've produced it. Patient testimonials, doctor testimonials, white papers, anything that can be geared, anything that can be bought. But the only thing that they haven't been able to produce is statistical significance in a robust clinical trial for this drug. And so the record now is starting to screech to a halt because people are starting to realize that the story here isn't exactly what they were sold. The drug may not be this magical drug that everybody thinks it is. The list of indications in the total addressable market might not be endless, like many people probably thought. And all of a sudden, now you're left with a company that has a $1.3 billion market cap and an $8 billion enterprise value, or whatever it is now. And it's not because the company isn't still generating cash, because it is from this drug. But it's because the market perception of the drug's future has changed significantly. And people are obviously starting to believe that this drug may not have the future that people think it will, or thought it will, once thought it will. The fact of the matter is that the drug should have never been granted so much leeway in the first place. And the executives and shareholders of Questcor cashed out. I don't know if they'll ever be held accountable, but I would love for them to be at some point. And you can't convince me that the executives at Mallinckrodt, especially CEO Mark Trudeau, who has a background in chemistry. I think he's a chemist. I think he has a bachelor's degree in chemistry or biochemistry or something. You can't convince me that he didn't know what he was doing. And from the conversation I had with somebody who spoke to him, and this is conjecture, hearsay, whatever you want to call it, but whatever, what I was told was that he understands what the criticisms are, but he's worried about, you know, the drug being accretive to EPS. And this was, you know, 5 years ago or whenever they made the acquisition, 4 years ago. So now it looks like the chickens are starting to come home to roost for Mallinckrodt. And what happened today? Today there was a whistleblower lawsuit filed by a former associate director at Mallinckrodt who basically claimed that the company doesn't really have any clue what's in its best-selling drug despite continuing to raise the price. So this whistleblower is now alleging that the company doesn't even know what's in the drug. And this goes back to Citron's allegations in 2014. Hey, chain of custody was respected. We ran a test on this drug. It looks like it's not what is on the label. And can the FDA look at it? And the FDA, I think, according to the New York Times, said that they were looking at it in 2014. Nothing has happened since then. So Business Insider did an article today, and they talked about some of the content of this lawsuit. And I just want to read a couple portions of the lawsuit that Business Insider pointed out. The whistleblower claimed that they joined the company in 2014 and that they were pushed out in 2018. And during that time, the whistleblower basically alleged that the executives at the company didn't really actually know what was in the drug. And the lawsuit states this: on October 10th, 2014, during a call with Director Niewoehner, I don't know how you pronounce it, but one of the Mallinckrodt directors, he conceded to Ms. Dhaliwal that Acthar is not highly purified ACTH 1 through 39 as represented to the public. And 1 through 39 is that amino acid chain that I was talking about earlier. Director Neuhauer stated, so it's not only ACTH 1 through 39, there's these other small ACTH 1 through 14, ACTH 1 to 17, ACTH 1 to 9, all these other smaller fragments of ACTH, which we believe helps give Acthar its potency and physiological effects. For your own knowledge, there's other shit in the vial. So that is what the lawsuit alleges that this director stated. Now, after Citron's initial report came out and claimed that the drug was deamidated, or that the amino acid chain in the drug that they tested was different than what was on the label, I took that because I don't really know shit about chemistry. I have a very limited background in chemistry, and I have a very limited background in medicine. Almost no background in either. To be honest, I don't have any formal background in either. So I took this information, and I went to the University of Penn, which was near where I was living. I was living in 25th and Locust in Philadelphia. So I went over the bridge into West Philly, and I started to talk to doctors that were just walking around Penn. And I had a survey that I had printed out, and actually, I want to see if I have the... survey here. If you bear with me for 1 second, because I had a survey that I walked across campus with, and I asked some doctors if they would be nice enough to fill out a survey for me, basically. I don't think I have it. Hold on, I'm going to check one more drawer. This is what you get from an unedited podcast. You get me doing my research as it's happening. I don't know where it is, but if I find it, I will post it on my Twitter, or I will post it in the info to this podcast or somewhere. It's around here somewhere. I know I saved it. It's in, I actually have the clipboard here that I used, but I don't know what I did with the folder full of all of the surveys. But basically, what the survey said was, here is what's supposed to be on the label of a drug, and I listed the amino acid chain that was on the Acthar label, and I asked, I put next to that the amino acid chain that was found by Citron Research, and I asked several questions, starting with questions like, if, you know, somebody came out and alleged that this what was in the box versus what was on the label, is it something that the is worth reviewing for the FDA? So the first thing I wanted to find out was, you know, did the allegations mean anything? I don't really know anything. Is there a huge difference between a glutamine and a glutamic acid when you're dealing with this amino acid chain or not? And overwhelmingly, the response that I got was, yes, it's a totally different drug. It's something completely different. The next question that I asked was, you know, if somebody who is not a doctor, doesn't have a medical background, alleges this and files a formal complaint and sends their lab results to the FDA, is it something that you think should be evaluated? And overwhelmingly, the answer I got was yes. And then there were a bunch of follow-up questions, basically asking about, you know, in, I think there were probably 10 questions, and in no uncertain terms, they pretty much tried to figure out whether or not this would be something that was of concern or not. And overwhelmingly, the responses that I got from doctors of various disciplines that I talked to, the answer that I got was yes. And when you walk around Penn Hospital on, you know, it was a nice day out, I basically just sat outside and was just chilling out for a while. I spent probably 5 or 6 hours doing this. And I think I surveyed maybe like 30 or 40 doctors. And I got hematologists, and I got oncologists, and I got, you know, radiologists, and I got, you know, doctors, I got physician's assistants, I got people with very robust backgrounds, I got people with less robust backgrounds, I got residences, I got people that were extremely well-accomplished doctors. There was one guy I know who had been there for like decades who, you know, was a prominent doctor and also happened, I think, to be an academic at Penn that I spoke with who was really nice and gave me a lot of his time. And in the process of doing this research, I found out that yes, at least there was some cause for concern here. Again, the data that I was getting wasn't, you know, clinical data. This was just to basically inform me personally as to whether or not this was something that was worth pursuing. So again, the FDA said that they were looking at it. We didn't hear anything back from the FDA. And now here we are 4 years later, and a whistleblower lawsuit alleges that, quote, there's other shit in the vial. So the claim by the person who filed the lawsuit was that the company really couldn't answer the questions that were lodged upon it by payers about the drug's efficacy and the drug's composition, and that obviously the company wouldn't share its efficacy for the off-label uses that it encourages the doctors to prescribe the drug for. So again, we have a question of, is there any really meaningful clinical data that supports the use of this and all of these off-label uses? So here's another quote from the lawsuit, which was pointed out in the Business Insider article. Executive Director Foster also stated at the September 4th meeting that if the FDA knew that no one at the company had information pertaining to the actual ingredients for the drug, the agency could open up the label for review and request that information, indicating that if that were to happen, to Mallinckrodt Pharmaceuticals would be shut down. Further, Executive Director Forster stated at the September 4th meeting that when Questcor sold the company to Mallinckrodt, they were provided with the ingredients/recipe in a file that is locked up and can't even be opened due to all of the protections in the file. This is just fucking insane. Executive Director Foster also stated that David Medeiros was the only person who had this information and was the one that provided the file in this manner. According to Executive Director Foster, if the FDA questioned Mallinckrodt about this information, they would not have an answer as they would not be able to open the file. So what this lawsuit is alleging is that this drug, and just stop me if this sounds insane, that this drug that initially cost $100,000 and was flipped into a $5.6 billion company that was then sold to Mallinckrodt, which at one point had a $15 billion market cap, is locked. The ingredients to this drug are locked in a file that nobody can open, nobody understands, nobody knows what's in it, and they're selling it for $30,000 a vial, and insurers are reimbursing it. Do you understand how fucking insane that is? That is insane. If that's true, if what this woman is stating in this lawsuit is true, it is fucking insane. It is easily, and I've said this privately amongst people I've talked to about this, but I have often predicted, just my opinion, that this will be one of the biggest pharmaceutical stories in history. And I think actually Citron wrote the same thing in one of their early reports. I think they opened one of the reports saying this will be the most appalling story in the history of, you know, pharmaceuticals. And I tend to agree. So the Business Insider article continues by saying that supervisors at the company allegedly instructed Dhaliwal, who is the whistleblower, to, quote, misrepresent the actual clinical data concerning Acthar in order to alleviate the reimbursement hurdle by government payers to improperly increase Acthar sales, essentially causing the submission of false or fraudulent claims for payment or approval. Now, of course, Mallinckrodt came out and said the company vehemently disagrees with the allegations made in the complaint and intends to vigorously defend itself in this matter. But if these allegations are true, this is insane. And the market is starting to catch on to this, which is why this company's stock has gone from 100 or 105 or 110 all the way down to where it is now at about $14 a share. The story is, it's almost too big to be untrue. It's almost too egregious to be reality, but it is reality. And now Mallinckrodt has big problems. They're sitting on a pile of debt that is, you know, $6 or $7 billion. Their sole drug that's really their, you know, the meat and potatoes of how they make their money is under fire, significant fire. And there's really no way out for the company at this point. I mean, I wrote in an article that I put on Seeking Alpha maybe a couple weeks ago that the equity is probably worth zero. I tweeted the same thing today. Because this is insanity. The fact that this has gone on for 4 or 5 years and that nobody's noticed it is insane. the fact that a $5 billion company was, you know, built on this drug that nobody really understands, that was marketed as some type of secret sauce, is nuts. You can't take a $100,000 drug and flip it into a $5 billion company. Something's wrong. Those things just don't happen. You know, it would be like me telling you I walked into a casino today and I put one penny into a penny slot and I played one line, the middle line, and I hit a jackpot. And the jackpot was, you know, $15 million. What does he say in casino? He's like, if you're not in it, if you're not, he says something like, he goes down and he's talking to the guy that manages the slots. You know, if you're not in on it with him, then you're too stupid to understand what's going on or something. You know, it's the odds are too crazy. And you don't need a PhD in finance or economics from Yale to understand that. All you need to do is just understand that if it's too good to be true, a lot of times it is. And that if something makes sense, if something doesn't make sense, rather, it's probably not true. And those were the super duper, you know, deductive reasoning skills that I used to help guide me when I first started looking at this story in 2013 or wherever it was. So now Mallinckrodt's in big trouble. They're in really big trouble. And if they can no longer generate cash, but they still can, they're still cash flow positive company. But if they get to a point where they have trouble generating cash, then they're going to have real trouble. And I think it could go the way of a Valiant or a Concordia. And I think truly that the end game for Mallinckrodt is that the equity is a zero. And this is what I thought was going to happen back in 2013, 2014 to Questcor, and it didn't. I was short Questcor and I got carried out. After they got bought out, I got screwed. But sometimes that's how it works, you know. I was short Green Mountain Coffee based on the Keurig cold being a piece of shit. And they got bought out for 100% premium. And I lost on the trade. And what was the first thing that their buyer wrote off was the Keurig cold. So you have to be right on your thesis and you have to be right on your timing. I anticipate the same thing will happen to Herbalife eventually too. That company will start to crumble under the weight of its debt. And organically, its business will not perform well. But you can be right about the facts and still have your timing wrong. And you can get screwed on the investment. And that's what happened to me with Questcor. I got carried out of the short. But now it looks as though the most important part of this, which is that this insane story is uncovered, now it looks like this is starting to kind of make its way out there. And this is going to be interesting to watch. Because there's going to be a lot of accountability to go around. And if this case goes to discovery and they say something to the tune of, show us what's in Acthar, or show us, you know, what Questcor gave you that gives you the quote unquote recipe for what's in it, and they can't produce that, then you got a big problem. Then you got a really big problem. So we'll have to see where this goes. But I wrote an article on Seeking Alpha a couple weeks ago called, you know, Reality Finally Catches Up with Mallinckrodt, that I'd encourage you to look at. Basically lays out a lot of the stuff that I talked about here. There's going to be plenty of accountability to go around when this Mallinckrodt story is over. And I am anxiously awaiting that to happen. I hope that justice is served properly. We'll have to see how this winds up. But for now, Mallinckrodt was down a buck today to $13.89 it closed at. And I noticed that there was a lot of put volume out in the May 1250 puts. So you have people, I think, that were buying them for $1.20 or $1.15, assuming they're out there betting that the stock is, you know, going to go even lower. It's going to go down probably closer to $10 or under $10. I think that's going to happen. I just don't know how long it's going to take. But the wheels are coming off. And the truth behind the Acthar story is going to come out, in my opinion. So we'll just have to sit back, relax, and hopefully wait for justice to be served.